Shalom. We're in Inaya, Rav Kook's commentary on Masechet Shabbat, on the Agadata, the Midrashim of Masechet Shabbat. And we're in Pisca Membet, 42. And we're in the middle of the Midrash, which talks about when Shlomo HaMelech finished building the Beit HaMikdash. And it's the Gemara Masechet Shabbat, Daf Lamed, page 30. The Kohanim wanted to bring in the Aron Hashem, the Holy Ark, into the Beit HaMikdash, and the gates refused to open up. Davku she'arim ze bazeh. We're on page 84. The gates stuck together. They didn't let them bring in the Aron Hashem. Amar Shlomo 24 renanot velo na'ana. Shlomo HaMelech prayed, Davin, 24 different tefillot. He sang 24 songs. We saw last time Rav Kook says that it's referring to the 24 matnot kehuna, the 24 gifts of the Kohanim, and we won't go over what he said there. Patach v'amar se'u she'arim rasheichem v'inasu pitchei olam v'yavo melech hakavod. So Shlomo HaMelech started saying what we say in Mizmor LeDavid, or LeDavid Mizmor, open up your gates, and the great honorable king will come.
That's
Ratu Batrei LeMivle'e. It's Tehillim 24. That's an interesting... Okay, so they started running after him. The gates started running after Shlomo. Rashi explains that they thought that when he said, open up the gates for the honorable king, he was talking about himself, the king of Israel. Amru, so Shlomo, they said, Miu zamelech hakavod? They said, you're saying, open up for, you ask, who is the honorable king in a question? As if it's not clear? As if you consider yourself also an honorable king? Amar lehu, Shlomo answered them, no, Hashem izuz v'gibor. I'm referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazar v'amar, then he, to stress the point, he comes again and he says, Su sharim rasheichem usu pitchei olam v'yavo melech hakavod. Mi hu ze melech hakavod, Hashem tzva'ot o melech hakavod tzela. In case it wasn't clear enough, the previous time, and there are a lot of interesting questions, what is the symbolism here? Pisca Membet. Rav Kook talks about why the gates, not only did they remain closed, but they chased after Shlomo, Solomon, as if it were to swallow him up. And they said, Miza melech hakavod, who is the honorable king, you ask? You know, well, what kind of wording is that? You word it in a question as if there's room that people should say that you are the honorable king, that the gates should open for your honor. Umnam. Tovahi ha-she'ifa l'chavod ha-lu'umi she'yitgadel. As we saw last time, Rav Kook associates Shlomo, as Chazal do, with the status, the national status of Am Yisrael at its peak, at its height. In the time of Shlomo HaMelech, we had just about all of Eretz Yisrael. The government was strong, the army was strong, our politics were strong, all the nations of the world wanted to come and have their daughters marry Shlomo. We were the superpower of the world. And that's what Shlomo represents. And as we saw, that is why the Beit HaMikdash could be built in his time. Because only, as we saw previously, only when Am Yisrael is respected, uvechein ten kavod Hashem le'amecha, can you have simcha le'artzecha v'sason le'irecha, utzmichat keren le'david avdecha, etc., etc. The Beit HaMikdash can only be when Am Yisrael is respected and strong. So, that's what Shlomo represents. It's true, and this is very important, especially for those who are just visiting for today, you have to understand Rav Kook in the context that, yes, he is a super nationalist. Today I sat in the college where I teach with one of the students who's doing a seminar, Avodah Seminar Yonit, a thesis on Rav Kook in the State of Israel. And Rav Kook talks about the importance of the State of Israel from a lot of different aspects. A, kavod, that we just said before. B, The idea of Am HaNivchar, Am Segula, the chosen people. The national aspect of Am Yisrael is not just a national aspect like the French or the Italians, but it is a moral and universal job as well. In addition to the idea of learning altruism, where a person in a national framework takes himself, has to rise above his individual or his self-centeredness to be more altruistic, more godly, more giving, whether it be dedicating 3 years to the army, whether it be even, if need be, to give your life for Am Yisrael. Rav Kook talks a lot about the importance and the ideal of Gur Aryeh Yehuda, the Lion of Judah, the light to the nations. Nevertheless, here, he's telling us that even though that nationalism of the Austrian sailor that we saw last time, the Austrian sailor who was so proud of the Austrian ship, and when even somebody pointed out, hey, this English freighter is even bigger than your Austrian ship, the Austrian sailor got excited and he said, just wait till you see a real big Austrian ship. And Rav Kook says that is healthy nationalism. It's natural, it's healthy. Nevertheless, if it's not connected with the intellect, it just remains base and crude, then that is immature, it's self-centered, and egoistic. And eventually, the world is going to mature to a post-modernism, post-nationalism, and we have to make sure that we don't get to a post-Zionism. Because our nationalism, as we said, as Rav Kook explains, is significantly different than other nationalisms. And what is the difference? What he's saying now, that it has to, that emotional nationalism has to be connected with the intellect. And that is, that it has to be, that's the symbolism of the Aron HaShem. The Aron HaBrit, the Holy Ark, with the Torah, with the tablets inside, that has to be at the center of the Mishkan, of the Beit HaMikdash. So even though Shlomo represents the Mize Melech HaKavod, I am an honorable king, and the king of Israel should be honored. As a matter of fact, the Rambam paskins, Melech Shemachal Al Kvodo, in Kvodo Machul. He cannot, even if a king were to come in and everyone stand up and he would say, sit down, you're not allowed to sit down. He is not allowed not to be disheveled, right? He's not allowed not to shave. He's not allowed not to be kempt, have his hair cut, etc. So, with that nationalism and the importance of Shlomo as a national symbol of the nation of Israel, nevertheless, keep that in proportion. Remember that it has to be connected, that emotional nationalism has to be connected with the intellectual universalism, which is a lot higher level of a truth, of a ideology, of ideal.
Aval koach ha'adam ha'chalush b'sha'a shu osek b'megamato ha'pratit.
Very often, man in his weakness, in his shortcomings, even Rav Kook is daring to say this about Shlomo HaMelech, the wisest of all men, has a tendency, shuosek b'megamato ha'pratit, when he's working on developing the task at hand, at the immediate or subjective ideal of Israel, of nationalism,
hagdalat kvodo v'tifarto,
kama noachu, how easy it is, how comfortable it is,
shibala kulo rak ba'emtza'i ad shetishakach mimenu hatachlit legamrei v'yishkach klal mi huze melech hakavod.
A beautiful explanation. How could Shlomo HaMelech, as if it were, how can we even think that he made the mistake that he's referring to himself as I am the honorable king? Explains Rav Kook. He's doing it l'shem shamayim. When the state of Israel, when the king of Israel raises the national flag in the name of nationalism, that is also, you could say that it is l'shem shamayim. But what's the problem? Very often, Rav Kook is ingeniously analyzing a common problem
that we've all seen in life. People mistake the means for the end. How often have we seen in politics that people get so into their political party that they totally forget what the ideology of the party is? Because sometimes the ideology of the party, you know, you get so hung up, we have to win the elections, and you'll find people, sometimes you see Israelis, like from Shalom Achshav, they go and meet in J Street, and they go and meet with Obama and different senators to convince them against the elected government of Israel in the name of their ideology, in the name of democracy, right? You were voted out, the people voted against you, but their party, their ideology, we saw this in a lot of times in the Labor Party, right, in the time of Ben Gurion, where they say that he was a dictator, and he would make sure that the Mapai would win the elections no matter what. And historically, I wasn't around then, and the way God runs history, usually the right person comes at the right time. That's apparently the type of leader that we needed at the time. Jews otherwise wouldn't listen to another Jew. You know, you need this little dictator to make the decisions, you know, to dare to declare Israeli independence, even though it was basically 5-4 in the vote, and he had to bring in a Rav Maimon, right, strapped into a helicopter with half his body outside. He flew him in from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv to be the deciding vote. And that is how the state of Israel was declared. It wasn't very democratic. I'm sure he did a lot worse things, according to what they say. But look at Oslo, right? Where Rabin bought Goldfarb and Segev, right? He gave them their Mitsubishi, made them Sarim ministers, and convinced them to move from the Tzomet party, where they were elected on a very clear right-wing platform, to get them to jump to the far left to give away parts of Eretz Yisrael. Why? I have no doubt that if you were to ask them, are you doing this just for the kavod of being called a minister? Or just to get a Mitsubishi? Or just to get another raise in your salary? I'll give them credit that they would say, no, I am doing this for the sake of the state of Israel. And his personal advancement is definitely going to be good for the sake of Israel. You'll find sometimes it's not uncommon in Israeli politics for somebody to jump from the left to the right and from the right to the left and claim he was an infiltrator.
Cool politics.
Yeah.
Some of the United States also every day of the week.
Yeah, but sometimes people will justify their politics as if I'm going to be an infiltrator into the other side and I'll really be pushing my original agenda. And you see this in youth movements also, because youth, Davka, it's interesting, youth have a tendency to be very, very idealistic. But anybody who's been in a youth movement know that they're also the same politics and the same backbiting and the same jealousy. And people will do anything, you know, in the name of their youth movement. And, you know, if I can't be the head, I'm going to go and start my own youth movement. And it happens all the time where people look at the short-sighted, the means at the expense of the goal, at the expense of the real ideal. On kibbutz also.
They get stuck in the means and forget about the goal. They went into the means with an intention of achieving their goal, but the means, they got so involved in the means that they forget about it, as in, they didn't get out of it, that stage. And
correct.
Then eventually they forgot that they were actually in it for any other reason.
Nechon. I started mentioning the in kibbutz ideology also. At the beginning, the idea of halana babayit, of having children sleeping in children's homes and not with their parents, it did not begin as an ideal. It began as a necessity. And that there weren't buildings, and winter came, and the parents, you know, they were sleeping in tents and in lifts, and the women were at work, and they wanted the children to have good a solid building, and to have somebody to take care of them during the day while the mothers were at work. It was a necessity. It wasn't an ideal. But very, very quickly, very, very quickly, that necessity turned into people saw, turned the necessity into an ideal. In other words, what Rav Kook is saying here is, you got to be very careful, especially regarding nationalism, not to mix up the means with the end. Jewish nationalism is extremely important, but don't forget that the goal is a universal, moral, higher godly agenda. So he says it's very easy to be swallowed up in this. That's how Rav Kook explains the symbolism of that they wanted to swallow him up. The gates wanted to swallow Shlomo up. Yishakach shetachlit hagdalat hakavod haleumi v'chosno. People may forget and think that the goal of strengthening the nation and the state and its honor, tzarich shetiyeh tamid, he stresses, constantly, always ne'erechet ba'ofen kazeh sheyaviyeh tatachlit hanirtzeit mimenu, to that it will always bring the end ideal closer. Shal yaday yigdal kavod shem elokei Yisrael ba'olam leman teitzei ha'teuda klalit al yaday am Hashem ele shebra'am lichvodo. Baruch Elokeinu shebra'anu lichvodo. Here Rav Kook is giving a nice explanation that even the honor of Israel, Kavod Yisrael, is for the sake of Kavod Hashem. It's not the goal in and to itself. And practically, there's not such a big nafkamina, because the bottom line is, yes, the honor of the nation of Israel is very, very important. Nevertheless, somewhere along the line, if you don't remember the goal, then you can make mistakes. And even somebody like Shlomo did. Piska Mem Gimel. Amar Lehu. Shlomo HaMelech said to the gates, Hashem Yizuz V'Gibor, I'm not referring to myself that I am the honorable king. God is the honorable king. He is the strong king. Hashem Gibor Milchama, God is the strength of war. The Gibor, the strong person, the warrior. Says Rav Kook, Hadarach Shemeviyah Lahafil Et HaYesod HaElohi, Shumigamatam Shel Yisrael Ba'olam, like we said a minute ago, that the way to bring the godly idea, which is the goal of Israel, to bring it into the world, this is a big challenge, because so often throughout Jewish history we see halacha Esav sonet Yaakov. There is this antagonism towards the Jewish people, towards the role of the Orla Goyim, to be a light unto the nations, whether it be jealousy, whether whatever it comes from, this is going to be a challenge. As Iyafshar lo la Adam, lakir derech ha-malach el ha-tachlit, ki ima yidei shiyakir gvurato v'izuzo shel tzur Yisrael, shemitzad etzem kiumam shel Yisrael, b'tzura kazo shimishuna, V'yechida mitzuyenet ben kolamim. It's a long sentence, so we'll break it up. Again, Shlomo, Solomon, as we said, as we've been saying the last couple of paragraphs, represents the nation of Israel in its heyday, in its peak, in its national strength. But the goal is Tzur Yisrael, which ironically, maybe it's not a coincidence, that is in the opening line of the Declaration of Independence of Israel. That was the pshara. That was the compromise between Rav Maimon from the Mizrahi, who wanted to have written in the Declaration of Independence of Israel, Be'ezrat Hashem. And in the end, how did he shtup it in? As he signed his name, he wrote, Bet Ayin He, Yehuda Leib Maimon. Right, so he wrote the Be'ezrat Hashem near his name, so he shtupped it in without anybody noticing it. Ben-Gurion did not want God's name to be mentioned explicitly in the Declaration of Independence. What was the compromise? Be'ezrat Tzur Yisrael, with the help of the Rock of Israel. And everyone can explain it however he wants, whether it be the eternity of Israel, The truth is, we don't have a problem with that either, with the eternity of the nation of Israel, Hashem Elokei Yisrael Melech. The fact that God associates himself with the people of Israel, that's a legitimate nickname. Tzur Yisrael is a nickname for us, it's a nickname for God. The eternity of Israel is the eternity of God. I wouldn't be surprised if Rav Maimon, who was very close with Rav Kook, got the idea from here. I wouldn't be surprised. We have no way of knowing. But
is this not published until many years later?
It wasn't published, but it was around. But that's true. But we don't know what Rav Kook showed to his close friends and students. Shemitzad etzem kiyumam shel Yisrael b'tzura kazo shehi meshuna v'yichida metzuyenet ben kolamim tzarich gvura gedola le'etzem hitkaimuta shelo tivala al yedei kol hamona kochot mitnagdim la mikol avarim. Here, Rav Kook, as usual, is going back and forth between both sides of the pendulum. Now he's saying, with all due respect, with the end, you cannot concentrate just on the end without the means. Jewish nationalism, the Mashiach, the return to Eretz Yisrael, the revival of the Hebrew language, the flag of Israel, all of this is necessary. It's going to be, it has to be that way in order to stand up to all of the threats and all the opposition, the spiritual, religious, national opposition of all the nations of the world. In other words, we do need this Am Levadad Yishkon, this Am Kshei Orif, the stubbornness that always typified the Jewish people, to be willing to be soloists, like Shimshon in his time, like in order to stick it out and not to be influenced by the others and to lead the entire world slowly but surely, elevate them to a higher level. So this is the other side of the coin. Ve'od, lo dai shelo tiye menutzachat, ki im gam menatzachat, umapechet et kol haruchot asoarot lafitza. Not only that, it's not just enough that the nation of Israel is not defeated. That's obvious, that if chas v'shalom there is another Holocaust or a pogrom, that is not good for us and it's not good for the world. But Rav Kook is saying it's not just enough not to be defeated, not to be shechted. We need to be menatzeach. We have to be victorious. Like we said again, v'chein ten kavod Hashem li'amecha, the first stage is that the goyim stop laughing at us because chuchmat ha'misken bezuya udvarav einam nishma'im. Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelet that the wisdom of wimps, of nebuchim, of
losers,
is not listened to. Nobody listens to a loser. You can only learn from somebody who you respect. And therefore, the idea that Shlomo, that the state of Israel, has to have a formidable army and formidable economy and be respected among the nations, that's a necessity. So again, you see here, classic Rav Kook, he's showing this side of the coin, don't forget that side of the coin, and don't forget this side of the coin. Liyotan nichna'ot lerucha, umakirot et hod torata v'shem Hashem shenikra aleah. Because this is the way the goyim are going to be influenced. Rav Kook here is alluding to the basuk, v'ra'u kol amei ha'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra alecha v'yir'u mimecha. And Chazal say Masechet Brachot that the non-Jews of the world, the other nations, they will see that the name of God is upon you. That's the Tefillin Shel Rosh. And apparently it's referring there to the army of Bar Kochva, where we know that Rabbi Akiva and his Beit Midrash, they were very, very careful to wear the Tefillin wherever they went. That was a sign of Rabbi Akiva's Beit Midrash. And that's why, explains Rav Yoel Ben Nuni in a very nice, interesting article, why, out of all the mitzvot, the Romans decided to prohibit wearing tefillin. Because if you were caught wearing tefillin, you remember the story of Elisha Bala Knafayim, right? He was wearing tefillin and a Roman saw him, and he took him off and he ran away, and he miraculously, like a magician, turned into a Yonah, into a dove. Why did the Romans have it out against tefillin more than other mitzvot? because the tefillin was not just a religious symbol, but it was a national symbol. Those were the warriors of the Bar Kokhba rebellion of Rabbi Akiva and his Beit Midrash. And that, explains Rav Kook, that hood, that glory, that honor, that we have the name of God on our forehead, that is what's going to instill also the fear of God and also the values of God, of monotheism and morality, among the nations of the world. Kama nitzchonot shel milchamot noraot va'atzumot tzichim litlavot l'matara zu. Here Rav Kook is pointing out a sort of prophecy that we don't know how many wars there are going to be before the nations of the world will be willing to leave us alone and to be influenced with the love and the peace that we always want to bring to them. I think we might have mentioned once, somebody once asked Rav Tzvi Yehuda, why is it that when we talk about Am Yisrael, you always talk about Liot Mitamidav Shel Aaron, Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Ohev Et Abriot Mekarvan LaTorah, to love the people, and that love will also bring them closer to Torah. That's the slogan of Machon Meir, right? How do you get people to love Torah? Through Ahava and Emunah, the two Alephs, love and belief. So that's Rav Tzvi Yehuda. Why don't we say the same thing to the Arabs? If we show the Arabs love, maybe they'll love us in return. So Rav Tzvi Yehuda answered, he said that we will do it with love, but with the help of tanks. We need a lot of tanks behind us to convince them to lay down their sword. Right? As they used to sing, I'm going to lay down my sword and shield, pick up my M16. And there has to be that stage. Rav Kook is wondering aloud how many wars we are going to have to fight before we finally convince the Goyim that we are interested in peace. We want to better their world, their morality. We don't want them to be evil either. We mentioned once the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim, who says that the person who suffers most from evil is the evil person himself. It's immoral to let the evil person continue to be evil. Right? He is not going to have a happy marriage. Children don't love an evil father. Every time he brushes his teeth, he looks at an evil person. And therefore, we have to have that, not only not to let them defeat us, but we have to defeat them, as long as they're coming at us. Now, I want to mention here an important point that we mentioned once. Rav Kook writes, it's found in Ma'amarei Re'iya, in Rav Kook's approbation for the Jewish National Fund, for the Keren Kayemet, where he says that our dream is to buy the land of Israel, dunam after dunam, acre after acre, build more kibbutzim, build more moshavim, to buy the land. Because it doesn't say anywhere that the mitzvah of conquering, of inheriting the land of Israel, has to be done by a sword. Adarabba, he says, we prefer, based on the pasuk in Tehillim, pitchu she'arim v'yavo goy tzadik shomer emunim. We want to come back to the land of Israel as a goy tzadik. And that's why Rav Kook was so thrilled with the Balfour Declaration. Because any Jew who read the Tanakh and so, yeah, we're going to come back, and yeah, we're going to have a third commonwealth, and Am Yisrael is going to be a big, strong nation. How does that jive with being a goy tzaddik? Oh, JNF came up with a solution. Let's buy up the land. And eventually, it'll belong to the Jewish people, and the government will go by the majority, and we'll live happily ever after. And then, in Tafresh Pei, and then Tafresh Pei Aleph, 1920, and the riots of 21, then the riots of 22, and even more so, the straw that broke the camel's back was 1929 with the Hebron massacre. That I wrote an article on this, tracing Rav Kook's eulogies for the massacre of 20, compared to those at 21, compared to 22, compared to 29, where you see a gradual understanding that, as they say in Hebrew, nafal ha'asimon, it registered to Rav Kook, the Arabs are not going to let us buy the land peacefully like we want to. And like we've seen many times, in the words of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook, the bidyevet of man is the l'chatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it is bidyevet. Yeah, we would have preferred to take the land with universal backing, not just from Balfour, not just from San Remo, not just the League of Nations, not just the United Nations, but the Arabs too, that the whole world should support our return to the land of Israel. Hashem izuz v'gibor. Mitzana kiyum ha'le'umi ha'prati. This idea of that God is strong, that is referring to the strength of Israel. We need that aspect of national strength, and apparently that is how God is running the redemption. He wants us, apparently, b'di'eved, according to where the world is at now, there needs to be the War of Independence, and the Six-Day War, and the Yom Kippur War, and Tzuk Eitan, and all of these wars, apparently, we need them. Hine nitgala lefanav haderech hamagia et haregesh haleumi litchaber im haseichel hatahor hamevagesh mevakesh et hatov haklali al yedei derech shel rash veheres milchama. She'az haya efshar liyot hatachlit museget bizman katzar lefi hatziur haenoshi. Here, Rav Kook is shifting into a higher gear and alluding to a motif that is mentioned in several different places, that even though we would like children would like, we would prefer for the Mashiach to come in leaps and bounds and to have the Beit HaMikdash crash down from heaven and have all the Jews come on Aliyah on the wings of an eagle miraculously, and that the dream of Lo Yisa Goyo Goy Cherev, that the lion will live with the lamb, halavai that should be today. We don't want to wait. Right? We want Mashiach now. We don't want that slow process. Says Rav Kook, we're learning Rav Kook. We're learning Rav Kook. Rav Kook says that in his Igeret, Tafshin Nun Gimel, in his letter to Rav Harlap, he writes as follows. Lo chalishut koachu ze ma shi yeshuatam shel Yisrael yikima kima ki im gvurat gvurot. The fact that the Geula is taking place slowly but surely, not with supernatural miracles and leaps and bounds, this is not bidyevid. This is davka, shows that HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much controls the world that he can do it through natural means. Rav Kook has a similar idea in his Perush Enaya, the Gemara, which says, the Gemara gives two versions of a miracle. That a person, I don't remember the exact details of the story, Lo Mishaneh, that a person had a vinegar, and there was a miracle that God, according to one version, God turned the vinegar into wine, and he sold it and made a lot of money, because wine is a lot more expensive than vinegar. The second version of the story, says Rav Kook, is a lot more impressive. That the price of vinegar went up and it surpassed the cost of wine. Explains Rav Kook that a natural miracle, using the framework of nature, it shows a lot more mastery of God rather than supernatural miracles where you have to shodeid ma'archot ha'teva. Right? If God has to destroy and intervene supernaturally, as if it were, as if that would infer that he could not, Chalila, foresee that which was going to be and make sure 2-3 steps ahead of time that it could be arranged. And this is a very interesting, I have a chevruta, Michael Arlin, who gave me a beautiful mashal. He works in computer programming. He says that a computer programmer who's really, really on the ball, He foresees any bug that's going to come up. As opposed to another person who, he might be very creative, that once a bug exists, he can think and break his head to think of a solution to solve the problem. But the first is a lot better. The first type, somebody who foresaw and prevented any bug that can, that his computer program can deal with even before it arises. That is using the ways of nature. And this is how Rav Kook in Sefer Orot also explains the Gemara Baba Batra, which says, Chacham Adif Minavi. That even though most people would think that a prophet is on a higher level than a wise person, Chazal say no. That's a surprising statement, explains Rav Kook, no. Because wise people use the ways of nature. They use the way of the world. They don't have to make upheavals. They don't have to make revolutions that turn the world topsy-turvy. A prophet has to bring in Mr. God as an outside factor because the world is not functioning properly. That we're down here and we have to jump up here. The slow but sure process of kima kima, that's the way of the world. That a person matures slowly but surely. He learns slowly but surely. He has trial and error. But the whole, all of life, and the geula, and kibbutz galiot, and Jewish nationalism, and what we're talking about, the revelation of the godly morality in the world, it all, we hope, should come through natural means. What does that mean, natural means? We hope, and we prefer that it not be through war, through coercing the goyim to be moral, through forcing our godly morality upon them, but that it should be a more natural way, through explanation, through education. Again, just like buying the land of Israel is preferable to having to conquer it. If we need to conquer it, so we will. But the same thing, I'll read in Orot HaKodesh in Chelek Aleph, Amud 271. Rav Kook talks about the difference between Nevuah and Chochmah. HaChachamim Tchuna Ta'am Acheret. As opposed to the Navi, the prophet, who deals with emotion and jumping and leaps and, you know, Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel is doing supernatural miracles and turning everybody on. And then the next chapter, they're back to do Avodah Zarah. Matan Torah, right? The greatest miracles of people heard the lightning and saw the thunder. That wasn't a mistake. That's what Chazal say. Masechet Shabbat, Daf Peichet. The next day, they are bowing down to the golden calf. 40 days later. In other words, the idea of supernatural jumping, that's easy come, easy go. And real education is through slow but sure. That is the way of the Chacham. And by the way, Rav Kook writes elsewhere in Orot HaKodesh that there is room for both. And this in education, in my Midrasha, I used to have on the staff, I tried to make most of the staff the Kim'ah Kim'ah type of education. Slowly but surely, building, organized, book after book, chapter after chapter. But I always made sure to have two or three totachim, two or three cannons that come in once a week, blow them away, they leave the room. Wow. You can't build and educate just on the wows. They're good every now and then, and that's what Rav Kook calls the dilugim shebatalichim. The skipping, the leaps, like the Six-Day War was very clearly a leap. You know, things were going little by little, the state of Israel was growing, and then there was a terrible crisis, and we were under siege, and then we jumped. Within 6 days, the whole Middle East changed forever. You can't not see that leap. Nevertheless, Rav Kook says, that is not, it's a beautiful quote, I'll read it again from Igrot. Lo chalishut koach huzeh, ma sheyeshuatam shel Yisrael yikima kima. Don't think it's bedieved, because that's where we're at. It is not weakness that God brings the geula step by step, slowly but surely, kim gvurat gvurot. That is super strength that God can use the natural means to bring us where he wants. So again, war is leaps. We prefer not to do it through wars, but through the slow but sure process of, maybe you just mentioned one last word here of Cook as an interesting play on words, where he talks about, he brings the pasuk from Yeshayahu, ki lo berash Hashem, ki im bekol dmama daka, lo yashmiya bechutz kolo. The first is the pasuk from Malachim, the second is the pasuk from Yeshayahu, that the voice of God is not heard outside. God doesn't want to make lightning and thunder like he did at Har Sinai. That was, you know, we were primitive and we were slaves and we were paganists and God had to do things out of the ordinary. But the proper way is lo yashmiya b'chutz kolo. U'mikol makom l'torato iyim yichalu. And through that slow process, nevertheless, the goyim will come to the same fear of God. And here Rav Kook is doing a beautiful play on words. Yichalu is also from the word liyachel. Okay, yachel Yisrael al Hashem, to yearn. They will yearn for God, and they will also fear God. Fear of God will come through the wars of Israel, the tanks. The yearning for God will come through the slow understanding, education of the goyim. It's a double barrel. And that's why we also have, you can't just have Shlomo and the nationalism, but you also need the Aron Hashem. So when Shlomo is even hinting or alluding or could be misunderstood to think that the Jewish nation is Izuz V'Gibor, that he is the Melech, he corrects them right away, and he says, no, Hashem Izuz V'Gibor. And nevertheless, as we'll see, it wasn't enough. You need both the emotion and the intellect. And that really is the theme that we've been seeing over the last couple of weeks. The Kohanim harmonize the emotion and the intellect, the Avodah and the Torah. The Beit HaMikdash is also the emotion and the intellect, with the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Torah, in the center. And that's what Judaism is about. So we need both. But the slow but sure intellectual explanation, also when we're talking about Balei Tshuva, right? Balei Tshuva, a lot of times, I know they do at the different seminars, sometimes they have these, give us 45 minutes and we'll prove to you through Kabbalah and the Aleph Bet and the mystical meanings of the Aleph Bet that there is a God.
See you in 7 days.
Right? And you know, that the Western man does sometimes need that wow, right? You got to blow him over because he's not going to give you more than 45 minutes. On the other hand, that is not real education. Real education is the kima, kima. Kima, kima is not a weakness. It's a gibor shebagvurot. And therefore, we shouldn't complain to God that we want Mashiach now or that we want the Beit HaMikdash now. Obviously, we should try and do everything that we can to bring it through natural processes, not through assassinating prime ministers, not through making overnight revolutions to try and force religious law over a population who isn't ready for it.
It's a golden calf. It's Oslo when Rabin said Lo od ad levadad yishkod.
Yeah, that's another aspect.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Okay.